The Tom Woods Show, episode 2033.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, chances are if you're listening to this podcast, you are surrounded by irrational, panicked people who think you're a terrible person because you don't want to lock everybody in their houses. No amount of reasoning appears to accomplish anything. And not to mention the media has done nothing but stoke fear and fail to provide context. Well, one of the many benefits you get as a supporter of The Tom Woods Show is membership inside The Tom Woods Show Elite. Recently migrated off Facebook, so if that was holding you back, no longer. This group will keep you sane and informed, and as an added bonus, it won't accuse you of wanting to kill your grandmother. Join me in there at supportinglisteners.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm joined today by C.J. Kilmer, who hosts the Dangerous History Podcast. And we're going to talk about Florida. C.J. has lived here. I've lived here for 5 years, but C.J. has lived here for nearly 40. And we want to talk about the different parts of the state because a lot of people are considering moving here. So if you're this kind of person, this is the area for you. If you're that kind of person, that's the area for you. But we'll also talk politics. We'll talk history. So there'll be plenty to keep you interested, even if you're not intending to move to Florida. And of course, Florida is not your only option in terms of moving. There are numerous other places, and maybe we could do an episode on the pros and cons of each of those if I could think of the best guest for that. See, if I bring on a guest who represents each area, they'll all fight with each other about why you should move to their area. But if I could just pick a neutral party to run through the pros and cons, that might be nice. But I think you're really going to enjoy my episode today with C.J. Kilmer. C.J., welcome back to the show.
Tom, I am stoked to be talking to you again.
I am thrilled with the suggestion you made for this particular episode. It's true. I mean, let's be honest, people. A lot of people listening, a lot of you have daydreamed about the possibility of moving to Florida at this point, haven't you? And it's not for the usual reasons that people move. Retirees move here. People like the attractions. Maybe they want to get away from the cold north or something like that. But now it's just so you can live a normal life without being in a constant state of panic surrounded by crazy people. So CJ here has lived virtually his entire life in Florida. He's taught Florida history. He's very knowledgeable about it. And it seems like a good idea for us to just talk about Florida in general. I mean, we know about Ron DeSantis. We know about the policies down here. But let's talk about the pros and cons and what people considering moving should think about. So for this topic, given that it's so lopsided in terms of the guest knows everything and I don't know that much, except I know a little bit about the different areas of Florida, kick us off here. Where should we start this conversation?
Well, I guess I can just sort of give my sort of background with Florida a little bit so that people understand. I just turned 40 this year, and I was born in Miami, Florida, which is the Florida of Florida, is the way to think about it, in every sense of the word. It's the southeasternmost part of mainland Florida, and it's like all the stereotypes people have about Florida, Miami is the most extreme, you know, over-the-top version of that. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, listeners, check out the, you know, Cocaine Cowboys and all the other documentaries by Billy Corbin to get a sense of just how crazy it is. So I was a little kid down there in the 80s growing up. And then when I was partway through my schooling, we moved up one county to Broward County, which is the county where Fort Lauderdale is. And so I graduated high school there. And I then moved up to St. Augustine, which is in the northeastern corner of the state for people who don't know it, and got my bachelor's degree from a liberal arts college up there called Flagler College. And then after that is the only 2 years of my life where I've not been a Florida resident. I went up to Tennessee for graduate school, but then I returned back to Northeast Florida, and I've lived in the Northeast Florida region ever since. I lived in St. Augustine for many years, and I'm currently one county south of St. Augustine in Flagler County, which is roughly midway between St. Augustine and Daytona Beach to the south. So I'm 40 years old. I was born here. I've lived 38 years of my life here. And on top of that, as you said, I've studied Florida history quite a bit at both the undergrad and graduate levels. And I've actually taught Florida history at the college level for many years. So I know way more about Florida history than 99.9% of Floridians, especially considering, you know, a significant percentage of Floridians are either first or second generation Floridians. And, you know, a lot of them, they don't embrace their home state to the degree that I would like them to, I guess. A lot of people who live here, they don't really know its history. They don't really kind of like embrace what's unique and different about it. And oftentimes they have kind of more sentimental and cultural attachment to wherever they're from, you know, whether it's the Northeast or the Midwest or some other country in many cases. So yeah, I have a complicated relationship with Florida. There's certainly aspects of it that I can't stand, but there's other aspects of it that I love. So, you know, if I had to give, a lot of this is subjective, but if I had to give my short version of the negative of Florida, it would be that it is hot and it is flat and it is crowded. So if you're okay with those three things, then Florida is really a great place for you. I'm not a fan of hot, flat, and crowded. So I've always kind of chafed at that part of being a Floridian.
All right. Well, let me jump in on that, though, because I have only 5 years as a Floridian. And I'll say I agree with you about the hot weather. I mean, during the summer in Massachusetts, I would get the hot weather, but I would live not too far from the beach. So I kind of liked the hot weather. I could go in and swim, and it was great. It was perfectly fine. But when the hot weather goes on for like 8 solid months, I mean, we're recording this in December, close to Christmas, and it was 86 as a high the other day. Now, that's unusually warm, and it will cool off a bit in January, but it's punishing. It's too hot by almost any standard. So I agree with that. And of course, if you were farther north in Florida, it would be somewhat milder. It's true. I'm in central Florida. But in terms of crowded, I guess it kind of depends on where you live. I mean, I'm in a part of the state that's not especially crowded. I frankly wish it were a little bit more crowded so that there would be more retail establishments and things would be more convenient to me. It depends on where you are. If I had it to do over again, I would probably live, now this, it's a small place, maybe 35,000 people, but I would probably live, and people, I haven't looked into the real estate there. So if it turns out that all the houses are $5 million, don't come back at me and say, Woods, what's the matter with you? Nobody can afford those. I haven't even looked, okay? But I would move to Winter Park. I think Winter Park is a wonderful place. It's got a little downtown area with all interesting restaurants, not a Chili's to be found. Okay, I've had all the mozzarella sticks with marinara sauce I need to have in my life. And all down there, all interesting places to eat, cute little shops, a nice common area. It's a wonderful, picturesque little place right next to Orlando. I don't see how you'd be unhappy there. But I guess what I want to know from you is, since there are different parts of the state, and you can say that maybe they're even kind of culturally different, like the Panhandle is quite different from Miami, maybe we might say, okay, if you're thinking of moving to Florida and you're looking for X or Y, or you have, you know, this kind of lifestyle or this kind of preference, what part of the state would you prefer? Are you able to kind of break it down? Like, if you're looking for this, then Miami is the place for you, that sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure, because I've lived in Southeast Florida and I've lived in Northeast Florida, but I visited and spent a significant amount of time in pretty much every region of the state. So what I would say is, if you want giant cities and all the good and bad things that go along with that, then Southeast Florida, the kind of Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach, Metroplex, Megalopolis, which there's not gaps between the towns down in Southeast Florida where I grew up. It's just, you know, one town into the next. It's like you're on Long Island or something like that, as far as that goes. And so if you want that, if you want traffic, and but, you know, also the positive things of big cities, you know, as far as things to do, then that's the place to go. Personally, I never really liked it down there, especially I think it was Southeast Florida would have been more to my liking maybe back in the mid 20th century. But by the time I was growing up there, it was really, to my taste, overcrowded. Traffic is horrific. It's some of the worst in the nation. You know, it's got all the downsides of a big metropolitan area, crime, and, you know, there's a lot of diversity, people from many different countries, which, you know, there's good and bad sides to that as well. Orlando is probably second as far as giant metropolitan areas go in Florida. I will say, in Florida, what really matters as far as like how brutal the heat and humidity are in the summer, which, as you said, it's, you know, it's 8 months, right? You hear people say Florida has nice weather. And whenever I hear that, I always think this person, either there's one of two things behind this person's statement. Either they've only ever visited Florida in the middle of winter when we do get a lot of nice weather, or their entire yardstick for quote unquote nice weather is simply it doesn't snow. And that's all they care about, is it doesn't snow. But yeah, it's brutally hot and humid for, you know, 2/3 of the year or more. But with Florida, what really matters the most to how moderate the climate is how close are you to the coast? So I'm like a 10-minute drive from the Atlantic Ocean. And if you drive even 30 miles inland from here, the weather is going to be more extreme. So on a cold day, it's going to be colder the more inland you go. But on a hot day, it's going to be hotter the more inland you go. The ocean moderates the temperature. So I would say if you want to at least somewhat moderate the weather, then try to get closer to the coast. Now, the downside of being closer to the coast, wherever you are, is obviously you're going to be impacted more when a hurricane comes through. Because the further inland you are, the more the hurricane is going to use up its energy, you know, before it gets to you. So, you know, hurricanes are just a fact of life. So anyway, Southeast Florida is where I would say someone should go if they really want just a giant metropolitan area. Central Florida, outside of the Orlando metropolitan area, Central Florida is relatively lightly populated, but it's going to be hotter in the summer there. And it doesn't even matter as much like north versus south within the state, as far as the climate goes, as much as, you know, how close you are to the ocean. So, you know, if you're in Miami, it actually is probably not quite as hot on average in the summer as if you're in like central northern Florida, believe it or not, because the sea breeze and everything, it really does, you know, cool it down a little bit. The Florida Keys are really cool. I spent a lot of time down there growing up. We would vacation down there almost every year. The problem there is you're very vulnerable to hurricanes. And it's also, especially now, it's a very expensive place to live. It didn't used to be as expensive maybe 30 years ago or so, you know, when I was visiting down there. It's gotten more and more, you know, extravagant. The southwest coast of Florida, I really love. The kind of like Naples, Marco Island, those sorts of places, Sanibel. Wonderful beaches, some of the best beaches in the state. Downside is a lot of those places these days are extremely expensive. And also you get clobbered by hurricanes pretty bad that way. Let's see. The Panhandle I also love. The Panhandle is outside of either Pensacola or Tallahassee. The Panhandle outside of those two areas is probably overall the lightest population density. And it's culturally the most southern. The Panhandle is often referred to as Florabama, because it really is just like culturally an extension of Alabama or southern Georgia. The problem there is, and really this applies to almost the entire Gulf Coast. I love the Gulf Coast. I love the beaches there. I love the fishing. I love so much about it. But the Gulf Coast of Florida, especially the Panhandle, seems to be the most hurricane-prone part of the state. And so the main reason I don't live in the Panhandle is because I don't want to get clobbered by giant hurricanes like literally almost every year. I don't want to deal with that. I was a little kid in the early 90s when Hurricane Andrew clobbered South Florida. And I don't want that happening or being a likely possibility, you know, every year or so. So that's my knock against the Panhandle and against the Gulf in general, why I love visiting, but I wouldn't want to live there. And I actually, my favorite part of Florida is where I live, which, you know, probably makes sense, I guess. Northeastern Florida from, say, Daytona up to the Georgia border, it's, for whatever reason, maybe it has to do with the fact that the land kind of goes west a little bit. If you look at the contours of Florida, it kind of goes in and then it sweeps back east once you get up to Georgia. For whatever reason, hurricanes, they do hit us every now and then, but they tend not to hit us as often as the rest of coastal Florida. And, you know, a lot of the time when we get a hurricane in northeastern Florida, it's just like the edge of a hurricane. It's not, you know, right around the eye wall where the worst stuff is. So where I'm at right now, like I said, I'm in Flagler County, which is like a media, it's right in the middle of the pack, I believe, in terms of population density and all that. And so, you know, there's a fair amount of stuff to do and things. Where I'm at is a town called Palm Coast, which is extremely bland, generic suburbia. But if I drive 30 minutes north, I'm in St. Augustine, which I lived in for many years and I love. And St. Augustine has all kinds of cool stuff to do. Lots of history. There's, of course, the old Coquina Spanish Fort there. And, you know, tons of great restaurants and cultural activities and whatever like that. And then if I drive maybe 40 minutes south, I'm in Daytona Beach, which has, you know, the racetrack for people who are into that, but all kinds of other stuff down in Daytona going on. So, you know, personally, I'm really happy where I ended up. The main reasons I don't live in St. Augustine anymore, I love it there, but the housing and real estate got too expensive in recent years in St. Augustine, and I was looking to get a bigger house for my family, and we simply couldn't afford it in the St. Augustine area, whereas we could down here a half hour south. And then I've got other kind of family and personal reasons for being a county south as well. But, you know, if I have to be in Florida, this is personally where I would want to be. Now, putting my cards on the table, I'm not someone who likes living in a giant city or metropolitan area. I've never been a fan of that, even though that's where I grew up. And I like having a lot of outdoor activities. I like having lots of, you know, state parks and things like that. And by the way, one of the things I will give the Florida state government credit for doing pretty well and better than most state governments is the state park system here is really good. There are a lot of really cool state parks to visit throughout the state of Florida. So for me, I like hiking, I like fishing, I like, you know, canoeing, kayaking, all that sort of stuff, camping. And so this is a pretty good spot for someone who has similar sorts of, you know, likes and dislikes to what I have. But, you know, your mileage may vary. Now, in Northeast Florida, if you want a pretty darn big city, Jacksonville, which is about an hour north of me, you know, it's not quite as big as the Miami Metroplex, but, you know, it does have a serious international airport. It is a big city. It does have a lot of, you know, that kind of stuff going on. And again, I like where I'm at, where if I want to go to the big city, I can drive an hour to Jacksonville and I'm in a big city, but I don't have to actually live in it. And same thing, basically Orlando, from where I'm at, Orlando is about 90 minutes drive. So, you know, anytime I want to do any of the Orlando activities and, you know, I'm not a big fan of the Disney parks and whatever, but I've got kids. So obviously I had to make the rounds there and all that over the years. It's kind of nice to have that where, you know, 90 minute drive is no big deal, but I don't have to live in Orlando because I really would not want to live in Orlando. It's got, you know, terrible traffic and a lot of crime and that sort of stuff, but it has a lot of cool stuff to do if you're just visiting. So that's kind of like my bird's eye view of the different areas. If you want someplace really remote, and if you're looking to like build your, you know, Teotihuacan end of the world as we know it, apocalypse survival bunker or whatever, probably the best place is what's called Big Bend, which is the area along the Gulf Coast of the Panhandle where the land curves, you know, from going mostly northward to going mostly westward. And some of the most lightly populated areas in the state are in the Big Bend area. So if someone's looking to build an apocalypse bunker, that's where I would point them.
All right. Well, this is all really, really good stuff. I have visited some of the places that you've mentioned, but not spent a lot of time there. When I was up in Panama City area some months ago, or I guess it must have been quite a number of months ago, like early this year, I think they were ahead of the rest of the state. I think the Panhandle was ahead of the rest of Florida in terms of getting rid of the masks and just kind of resuming normal life even faster than the rest of the state. Because what I think some people don't realize is that there are still a lot of mask wearing in Florida. And, you know, there's still the occasional, we're not coming in the office because of the virus. And so everything is virtual. I mean, not everything is virtual in Florida, but you still run into medical practices that, you know, make you wait in your car. Well, you know, every once in a while you do run across that. But in the Panama City Beach area, it was like I was in a different world. And that was very interesting and very encouraging, actually, for me. I also, St. Augustine, I love very much. Been there a couple times. There is plenty of stuff to see. The Torture Museum looks like it's a tourist trap, but it's excellent. It's actually fascinating. So I actually recommend that you do that. I visited Delray Beach because Tom DiLorenzo used to live there. They moved away. And while we were there, this would have been probably June of 2020, we actually went to see some live music. In June of 2020, we went to a bar there that's kind of open air. And so two nights in a row, we visited them 2 days, and two nights in a row, we went and saw live music. And I feel like we were among the first people anywhere in the world to be observing live music after March of 2020. So that was also, that's also another place that I like. What I want to know is, in terms of cities, I get that you don't want to live there, but of the Florida cities you have experience with, which ones would you say have the most attractions that would actually draw, you know, not a 10-year-old kid, but an adult? I mean, like, which one of these cities would I feel like I could have a really fulfilling 3-day vacation?
Yeah, well, if you want to do the city stuff, I would say go down to Southeast Florida, because you've got Miami, and then, you know, 20 or 30 miles north, you've got Fort Lauderdale, and another 20, 30 miles north, you've got Palm Beach. And so between the three of those, I don't think there's anything that you could want to do as far as, you know, what we would think of as city activities, whether it's going to the theater, going to live music, having just, you know, endless amounts of really good restaurants, all that kind of stuff. You know, if you just went to, say, Miami or Fort Lauderdale, it's basically like you've got three cities right next to each other, each of which is big enough to have a lot of stuff going on. Another place that, honestly, I haven't been to in a while, that I went to several times growing up, but I haven't been back to for a while, that I remember being pretty cool, though, and I do want to get back to one of these days, is the Tampa area. Tampa's got some cool, you know, history and stuff to do. There's Ybor City, which was one of the earliest Cuban communities in Florida. It actually goes back to way before Castro, when you know, the big wave of Cuban immigration started coming to Florida.
By the way, for my transcriptionist, Ybor City is spelled Y-B-O-R. So if you're having trouble with that, that's what that is.
Yes. Yeah, so Ybor City is cool. There's a lot of, you know, history and culture. By the way, I would urge anyone who is, you know, visiting or moving to Florida, check out Cuban food. Cuban food is really good. And it's its own thing, you know. It's not the same thing. A lot of, you know, Americans, if they've grown up in places where there's not a lot of Hispanic presence, they might think that, oh, pretty much all Hispanic food is Mexican. Like, no, it's actually very different from one, you know, nationality to the next. And Cuban food is its own thing. It's got kind of a Caribbean flavor to it. And yeah, definitely check out Cuban food. By the way, one of the interesting things about Florida is the Cuban influence. And, you know, it's different than the Mexican, you know, the most common Hispanic influence in many parts of the United States is Mexican. But in Florida, it's different because it's more Cuban than anything else. And I actually grew up with a Cuban stepmother and stepbrother. So while I don't speak very good Spanish, I do have a lot of familiarity with sort of Cuban culture and cuisine and all that. And it's cool. It's its own thing. And they are, as far as I know, the only Hispanic group in the United States that tends to be more right-wing than left-wing. Now, it changes a little bit as generations go by. You know, first and second generation Cubans tend to be very right-wing. And then once you get beyond that, some of them start to, you know, become left-wingers and whatever. But a lot of Cubans are, you know, they're into hunting and fishing and guns, and, you know, they're right-wingers and all that sort of stuff. So it's definitely one of the influences that makes Florida different, because I don't think there's anywhere else. I know there's a little bit of a Cuban community in a few other places, like I think Louisiana and New York City, but there's nowhere where there's as much of a Cuban presence as there is throughout Florida, especially in Southeast Florida.
Well, an interesting polling number the other day, I don't remember the exact number, but Hispanics are going for DeSantis very substantially. So I'm sure some of that has to do with the Cuban population, but I don't think that's entirely it. And of course, Hispanic men in particular. So that's an interesting thing. Second thing, because let's say a little something about the politics of Florida. I just saw a headline the other day saying that in terms of voter registration, Republicans are now outnumbering Democrats in Florida. Now, Florida is an unusual place, right? Because you have so many transplants. I never in my daily life, never, ever encounter anybody with a Southern accent. Does not happen. Now, maybe that would happen in the Panhandle, some other parts, but I don't encounter anybody like that. So it's different.
Yeah, in the Panhandle, it's going to be people who sound like they're from Georgia and Alabama. And where I'm at, in most places, people sound like they're from Georgia. my particular town has a lot of northern transplants, so not so much here. But if you just go to neighboring towns in my county and in adjacent counties, you'll encounter a lot of southern accents. But an interesting thing about Florida's, you know, all the Yankees who moved to Florida, whether they're retirees or whether they're moving, you know, earlier in life, they tend to follow the interstate. And what I mean by that is, if you look at where I-75 goes versus where I-95 goes, right? I-75 comes down basically from the Midwest and then comes down and mostly runs along the Gulf Coast of Florida, right? So the people who, both the people who visit and the people who move to Florida, if they're from, like, say, Ohio and places like that, right, the Midwest, they're most likely to end up along the Gulf Coast. Whereas, look at where I-95 goes, right? I-95 goes from Maine, basically, you know, mostly pretty close to the Atlantic coast down the United States, and then runs all the way down to Miami. And so on the East Coast, the Atlantic coast of Florida, your, you know, Yankee population that moves in tends to be coming from the Northeast. And so the group that comes down 75 to the Gulf Coast, they actually tend to be more right-wing than left-wing. Whereas the group who comes from the Northeast, it's the other way around. Now, there are exceptions. I will say, where I live has a lot of Northeastern transplants, but a lot of them seem to be right-wing refugees, essentially. It's like the last right-wingers from, you know, New Jersey and Long Island and places like this, they end up where I'm at. They end up in my town. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind, is where people tend to come from. People tend to, when they move, just like when they vacation, they often take the path of least resistance. So if you're a Midwesterner, the easiest way to get down to Florida is 75. That means the Gulf Coast. Whereas if you're a Northeasterner, you come down 95 to the Atlantic coast. So, you know, that could be good or bad. It kind of depends on what you're into. If you're a New Yorker who's, you know, now a refugee to Florida for COVID reasons or whatever else, if you want to be around other New Yorkers, then come down the Atlantic coast. Whereas if you're from Ohio or whatever, come down 75 and you'll find a bunch of your refugee brethren along the Gulf Coast.
This is really helpful, actually. All these details are really helpful because I know there are people out there thinking about doing this. And Florida is a big state, and there are, as you say, numerous regional differences and a lot of considerations to bear in mind. Of course, if you are, and I'm not speaking to anybody in this audience at this point, but if you are absolutely panicked and monomaniacally fixated on this particular virus, then I have no idea why you'd be moving to Florida. As you know full well, you're not going to get what you want there. So it seems like it's got to be a self-selected group of people consciously making the decision to come to a place where the idea of public health is not so narrow and juvenile. So I wonder what that says about Florida's future. I mean, Florida's been kind of purple. Do you think this makes it red, if not permanently, then for a long time, or is it maybe not so open and shut?
I think it very well could. I think there's definitely, I heard recently, Dave Rubin is relocating to Miami and a few other kind of prominent, you know, more or less right-wing and or libertarian type people. You know, the big wave is to Austin, which that always baffles me. If you're going to move to Texas and you're moving because you're a right-wing refugee, why would you move to the most blue, you know, Antifa-infested part of Texas, which is Austin, right? But, you know, I think it could move Florida. And by the way, Florida did vote twice for Trump. And, you know, I'm not a huge Trump fan, but I'm also, you know, I'm not sure he wasn't the lesser evil for sure in recent presidential elections. But the thing to understand about Florida is that while it's a swing state and has been a swing state in national elections for decades, at the state level, the Republicans have dominated since 1999. So the state Democratic Party in Florida tends to not be very competent and effective at winning elections. Basically, they can win, you know, state legislature seats in the big urban areas, and that's it. Whereas, you know, if you look at state politics only, Florida hasn't had a Democratic governor since 1999, okay? And I'm pretty sure the legislature has been in Republican hands the entire time since then as well, right? So it's a swing state in presidential elections. But if you look at the state government And I believe even the congressional delegation is majority Republican and has been, you know, pretty consistently for decades as well. In terms of the state government, even without an influx of, you know, right-wing refugees from elsewhere, I don't think the state Democratic Party was ever likely to take over the state government, you know, in kind of our era. Now, it's true that DeSantis, when he got elected the first time a few years ago, he won pretty narrowly, but that was kind of unusual. And, you know, I don't think the legislature, even if the Democrat who's, what was his name?
Andrew Gillum.
Yeah. Even if he had won, and it was, the governor's race was close. Even if he had won, he would have had a Republican, you know, legislature, I believe both houses. So, you know, I'm not sure what he could have got through. Now, you know, with COVID, obviously, a lot of it goes to executive orders and governor fiat and whatever. So, you know, I'm certainly glad in retrospect that Gillum didn't win. And with him, I think part of the reason why he, you know, finished so close to DeSantis was that I believe he was the first Black major party nominee for Florida governor in the entire history of the state. And so there might have been sort of an Obama effect where it got out the Democratic vote in much, you know, higher than normal numbers, in particular, obviously, the Black vote. And so, you know, I don't think that race would have been as close as it was had it not been, you know, the first major party African-American, you know, nominee for governor of Florida. And I think, honestly, after what we've all been through, I think DeSantis is likely to get reelected, you know, hands down. But, you know, what'll happen after that, who knows?
Hey, folks, the Tom Woods mission to improve your life continues with this message from CrowdHealth. Open enrollment is ending soon, but a lot of people are still searching for their best healthcare option. And what do you know, given how screwed up American healthcare is, you actually wind up saving money if you secede from the traditional insurance system. And CrowdHealth offers you a more flexible and affordable healthcare option. So that's why I recommend checking out joincrowdhealth.com/99 to find out how CrowdHealth can save you 40 to 60% in healthcare costs each year. So again, it isn't health insurance. It's a modern way to pay medical expenses. It's a community of people who are tired of paying into an obviously broken system. And being a member of that CrowdHealth community can save hundreds of dollars monthly and put thousands of dollars back in your pocket. CrowdHealth gets rid of the insurance middleman and passes the savings on to its members. You scan your bills and just throw them away. CrowdHealth takes it from there. 100% of your monthly membership pays for actual healthcare costs and helps the whole CrowdHealth community stay healthy while keeping more money in your pocket. CrowdHealth is able to offer amazing prices because of its community of health-conscious members. But they have an amazing offer just for my listeners. Get your first 6 months for just $99 per month. That's a savings of almost 50% off their standard pricing and a lot less than one of those crappy high-deductible plans. Just go to joincrowdhealth.com/99 and enter code WOODS at signup. That's joincrowdhealth.com/99, promo code WOODS. CrowdHealth is not health insurance. It's a community-powered alternative. Terms and conditions may apply. Well, I know that this, I guess it's Nikki Fried, who's a Democrat trying to run against DeSantis. Apparently, she's on record, now you can't believe a word these people say, as not necessarily being enthusiastic about the Biden mandates. And she was asked about this. And she said, well, it's my job to represent the people of Florida, and they have indicated to me how they feel and whatever. So I thought that was interesting, whether or not she intends to, you know, actually act on that if she ever were elected. And she seems dumb as a stick to me, this woman. But the point is, I thought it was interesting that opinion must be making itself felt to the point where a politician like that in the opposing party has to make a statement like that. You know, I took that as something encouraging. What would be, you know, I mean, we're coming, you know, down to the end here. Is there any reason that somebody might prefer, I mean, there are other states people could move to, right? There's the Free State Project in New Hampshire. Of course, there's South Dakota. There's Tennessee, which has actually been pretty good, but it's been under the radar. It hasn't been out front like Florida has. But with the exception of Nashville and its blue mayor, it's actually been pretty good. Is there a reason that Florida outshines them all, in your opinion?
Well, I've visited New Hampshire several times. I've spoken at some Free State events and things like that. I love New Hampshire. it would be on my short list of places to move to if I had no, you know, other things to consider as far as like family and work obligations and these sorts of things. So I totally get the attraction of New Hampshire. And Tennessee, I lived in it for 2 years when I was in graduate school. I love Tennessee, in particular where I lived, which was the Knoxville area, East Tennessee, you know, close to the mountains. I really loved it. I loved the environment. I loved the people. I was kind of sad to move back to Florida, to be honest with you, after those 2 years. So with Florida, I think, again, it depends on what your kind of personal likes and dislikes, your sort of wish list, the boxes you want to check. I think if you want to move to a place where in most areas, you're not that far from a major urban area, you're not that far from a major international airport, you know, I could definitely see how Florida is more attractive, certainly than New Hampshire, and even to some extent from Tennessee. Now, on the flip side, if you're a person who really wants things to be rural and all that, then I would say probably New Hampshire would be number one, Tennessee would be number two, Florida would be number three, and it would depend on where you're going. But, you know, Florida and Tennessee and New Hampshire, all three of them are often in the top five of the, what is it, the Cato Institute's Freedom in the 50 States, where they rate the different states in overall freedom. And it's Cato Institute, and you know, you could criticize some of their criteria and whatever, but it's a pretty good kind of yardstick of like overall freeness, you know, between the different states. And Florida, Tennessee, and New Hampshire are pretty much always in the top five. They're often the top three states. I think this year in that rating that Florida was number two, but in just a year or two ago, they were number one. I think currently New Hampshire is number one, which I don't know how much they're factoring in COVID stuff. I would think that if COVID restrictions are a major, you know, heavily weighted criteria in that, that Florida probably ought to beat New Hampshire. But anyway, you know, it's a good state on economic freedom, but so is Tennessee. New Hampshire, if I remember right, I believe does have a state income tax. Tennessee does not.
Think it does. It doesn't have sales or income tax. They keep trying to put one in. And they keep being stopped. So my understanding is that they've continued to succeed in stopping it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's another mark in their favor then. I thought they had one, but it was very low, but I guess I'm mistaken. Yeah. So, you know, in the case of Florida, I don't know what the legalities are in Tennessee and New Hampshire, but I know that in Florida, in order for there to be a state income tax, it would require a constitutional amendment to the state's constitution. So the likelihood that Florida is ever going to get an income tax in the foreseeable future is essentially zero. Which is also the case with Tennessee and New Hampshire. It is a good state for guns, for firearms freedom. And I don't know where Tennessee is at with legal marijuana. I know, I think New Hampshire now has recreational marijuana legalized, if I'm not mistaken. Florida, medical marijuana is legal, but recreational still is not. So, you know, depending on how much that's important to you, and how much you're, you know, even if it is important to you, you're willing or unwilling to go the extra legal route there to get what you want. But, you know, it's a state that if you look back at its history, it definitely does have this kind of libertarian anarchist streak running through its history in different ways that might surprise people who don't really know the history of Florida. And so, you know, there was a brief fling with progressivism, kind of version 1.0, as I call it, in the early 20th century. From like 1900 until the 1920s, there were several progressive governors of Florida who were mostly pretty terrible in a variety of ways. But since then, you know, even looking at the era when Florida was electing a lot of Democratic governors, they were usually like fairly moderate to conservative Democratic governors. And there's always been this sort of anarchic streak in Florida. And, you know, you could see it if you watch something like the documentary Cocaine Cowboys, and, you know, lots of those people, you know, killed people and did horrible things and whatever. But the whole kind of like smuggler ethic, you know, during alcohol prohibition, Florida was one of the main gateways into America for alcohol. People were smuggling it in huge amounts from the Caribbean where it was still legal. And, you know, that continued into the drug smuggling in the 20th century. And there's just this anarchic kind of an attitude. This now, you know, it's not the only thing going on in Florida history. There's also a lot of cronyism in its history as well. But I don't know, there's just sort of an attitude, you know, just kind of like, for lack of a better term, kind of an F you attitude in Florida. You know, the stereotype of Florida man is that he's insane, but he's also, I don't know, he's free. I shared on social media recently a story that I absolutely loved, where it was a Florida man news story, but not the usual, you know, Florida man gets naked and tries to wrestle alligators while drunk or something like that. It was Florida man gets on airplane wearing a thong over his face to protest the mask rules on an airplane. And this guy apparently got on a plane, I forget in what airport, wearing a thong, like a woman's thong, over his face because he said, look, technically this meets the requirements. It covers my nose and mouth. And, you know, he got himself thrown off the airplane. And I read that story. I was like, yes, yes. See, this is the upside of Florida man, right? There's the crazy side of Florida man where, you know, it's Florida man dresses up like a chimpanzee and robs a bank and then immediately gets caught by the cops down the block. But, you know, you read a story like that and you go, there is a positive Florida man where Florida man is willing to ignore stupid laws and rules and regulations and whatever like that. And, you know, if you look back at Florida history, there's a lot of that going on. It was a haven during kind of the late Spanish period. Slaves would escape from places like Georgia and set up maroon communities, and the Spanish basically just left them alone. And even the Seminole themselves, they were basically Creek Indians who moved down for the most part from places like Georgia and Alabama to get away from, you know, people moving in on their lands and attacking them and whatever. And they gradually over time developed their own kind of identity as Seminoles. And, you know, in my opinion, one of the great libertarian heroes of Florida history is actually Osceola, who there's all kinds of stuff named after him throughout the state, but most people in Florida have really very little idea who he was. He was a Seminole leader who fought the Indian removal policy during the Andrew Jackson era, where the Seminole were one of the Indians who were targeted for basically forced removal to Oklahoma. And Osceola's attitude was, no, I have every right to be here. I've always lived here. And there's even, you know, treaties going back saying we're supposed to be able to live here. So no, I won't go. And he fought and led guerrilla operations against the U.S. military trying to forcibly deport his people out to Oklahoma. And actually, if you go to Silver Spring State Park, there's a statue there of Osceola stabbing the paperwork that he was presented with, basically saying, you got to move to Oklahoma. His response to being presented with this paperwork by the U.S. government was to pull out a knife and stab it into the document. Okay, and he fought, and he was a very good guerrilla fighter. And his only mistake was he actually believed that the U.S. Army would honor a flag of truce. He came in at one point during the war to negotiate, and the U.S. Army, I forget the name of the general in this instance, betrayed the flag of truce. And when Osceola came in to negotiate, just grabbed him and arrested him and threw him into a prison. They threw him into the prison initially at the fort in St. Augustine, but they were worried that his Seminole compatriots might try and jailbreak him and get him out. So they shipped him up to Fort Moultrie in South Carolina, where he died because he caught a disease while he was in custody. But, you know, I look at someone like Osceola, and I don't have any, you know, I'm not going to be Elizabeth Warren and claim Native heritage I don't have. As far as I know, I have no Seminole heritage in me. But whenever I read about Osceola and the way the Seminole resisted during the Second Seminole War, I always find it inspiring that these people, you know, stood up for their rights and were willing to, you know, take on Goliath in the form of the U.S. government. By the way, the Second Seminole War was the longest and most expensive Indian war in American history. So there you go. So there's all kinds of stuff in our history that 99.9% of Floridians don't know about. But if you really kind of embrace the place and try to, you know, grow some roots here and try to learn about its history, you'll find there's actually a lot of very inspiring things to be found. And so anyway, I have no idea. I'm sure there's probably some cool people in the history of Tennessee or New Hampshire or some other places. But anyway, that to me, at least as a guy who obviously is an unrepentant history dork, that's another appeal to me is that Florida actually has a very interesting and fascinating history. It was under the Spanish Empire for centuries. It was briefly under the British Empire, then went back to the Spanish, and then eventually was taken over by Team America. And so, you know, this was an imperial battleground. This was the weird southern frontier outpost. Much of Florida was still frontier into the early 20th century, believe it or not. And so there is this sort of libertarian streak, as there often is in frontier areas. People can look up what are known as the Cracker Cowboys, which were Florida cowboys. They were distinguished by, instead of, you know, riding around with ropes and whatever, they actually used whips and dogs from horseback to herd wild feral cattle. And in the late 19th, early 20th century, some of these guys actually made very well for themselves in that business, but they were extremely instinctively libertarian sort of guys, even though I'm sure none of them ever read, you know, Lysander Spooner or whatever. But there's all this interesting stuff that, you know, I think people, in a lot of cases, they need to learn and embrace their local history, because that's an important part of kind of decentralization, of people being willing to stand up for their local autonomy, that you can do that from a stronger position ideologically if you really know and embrace your local history and culture. So that's my pitch for that. Sorry.
Well, that's quite all right. Before we wrap up, why don't you take 60 seconds to tell people about your podcast and how they can listen?
Sure thing. So I've been doing my podcast, which is the Dangerous History Podcast, for a bit over 7 years at this point. I've covered all kinds of topics in history, mostly American history, but I've also done some stuff on other parts of the world and ancient and medieval and so forth. So dangeroushistorypodcast.com will take you to my homepage. You can just search Dangerous History Podcast wherever you like to consume your podcast and you will find it. And currently, one of the things I'm in the middle of is a giant, many-part, super detailed series on the life and career of Woodrow Wilson. And my most recent installment is part 9 in that series. And just to give you a sense of how detailed I'm getting, part 9 only got me through his second year in the White House. So, you know, lots of libertarians hate Woodrow Wilson, and I totally agree with them, but there's even more reasons to hate him than you know. So check that out. And also, by the way, I'm going to be starting very soon a mini series on propaganda in the United States during the First World War. So that actually has more relevance to today than people might think.
Well, all that sounds great. So I hope people will check it out. I'll have a link to you up on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2033. Thank you, CJ, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Tom. Same to you. It's been my pleasure.
All right, folks, only one more episode to go of The Tom Woods Show for 2021. And then we will be back Monday, January 3rd, with a brand new Michael Malice week for you. So if over the course of 2021, The Tom Woods Show has performed service for you and provided you some value, then consider becoming a supporting listener, not only because you'll feel like, you know, I'm helping out old Woods, but also because you get an almost ridiculous number of goodies in return. So check them out at supportinglisteners.com. Warm the old man's heart, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.